The Tom Woods Show, episode 431.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. Tom Woods here. Talking to James Bovard today about the TSA. You think you know all about the fiasco that is the TSA, but I'm telling you, chances are you don't know the half of it. And Jim Bovard is particularly well-placed to tell us all about it. Jim is an investigative journalist. He's the author of 10 books. He's written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the New Republic, Reader's Digest, and many other publications. He's been denounced by all different agencies of the U.S. government. We'll talk about that between this episode and the next time we talk to Jim Bovard in the not-too-distant future. I'm going to have him back on to talk about his memoir, Public Policy Hooligan. He is the author, among other books, of Terrorism and Tyranny, Trampling Freedom, Justice, and Peace to Rid the World of Evil, Feeling Your Pain, The Explosion and Abuse of Government Power in the Clinton-Gore Years, and Lost Rights, The Destruction of American Liberty. Jim Bovard, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tom.
I read your article in USA Today not long ago, and having recently read your book, Public Policy Hooligan, which we'll have you on sometime in the near future to talk about, I know that you've had this perch at USA Today, this ability to write editorials in USA Today that will, of course, be hotly contradicted by somebody respectable at USA Today since the 1980s, and you continue to put it to good effect. The article title here is TSA Has No Excuse to Continue the Groping, and then they've given a sort of a subtitle, Thieving Agents, Racial Profiling, and Excessive Pat-Downs Haven't Made Us Safer. And the article starts by saying that the former TSA chief actually attacked one of your articles, calling it misleading, inaccurate, and it unfairly disparages the dedicated TSA workforce. We will not sit back and allow misinformation and conjecture to malign our employees. What did you do to get him so upset?
I told the truth.
How about that?
Yes, well, it doesn't happen too often, but as far as some of these government agencies, I've written about the TSA, I guess, for a dozen years now, and I've followed their various boondoggles, and I've followed their lies, and I've watched them become more and more heavy-handed and violate the rights of millions of Americans every year, and I've watched them impose one nonsense safety routine after another, which doesn't really protect anybody, but it gives government employees a lot of jollies. And the article that the TSA chief attacked was actually a piece in the Washington Times, but he was very vehement, and I was especially pleased at his phrase that I'd unfairly disparaged TSA agents, because last week the Inspector General report leaked out that showed that the Inspector General undercover agents have been able to sneak weapons and makeshift bombs past 95% of the TSA agent checkpoints that they tested. And so it's almost impossible for a government agency to do worse. But it's fun to play with that and see how to take the words from the past from the TSA chief and say, okay, well, what now?
You know, it's funny you say that about the weapons getting through and failing these tests, because I remember, of course, I've had many things go through that weren't supposed to. Like, hey, look, that toothpaste they were supposed to confiscate. I crossed my finger, I kept it somehow. Like, it managed to get through. But I remember back in my academic days, I had brought a steak knife to work because I was bringing some leftovers. And so when I packed everything up into my bag that day, I had a steak knife and I forgot all about it. And I had to board a plane that day. And I sailed right through with a steak knife, sailed right through. And I didn't even remember the steak knife was there until on the way back they did find the knife. And they sat me down and interrogated me. And it's fair enough. I mean, I am trying to bring a knife onto a plane. I get that. But it occurred to me, well, that means I got the knife through on the way here. A knife. Like, it's not like a microscopic thing. I got a knife through all these machines. How'd that happen?
Well, I mean, it's all a bunch of security theater, and they have all these rules and basically to browbeat people as if that's going to make them safe. And it's kind of I've had a lot of run-ins with TSA over the years, as folks might imagine. But one of my favorite stories was, I think it was in 2002, 2003, I was flying to Europe, and I had it was in the winter, and on the prior day, I'd gone to a shooting range, and spent a couple hours there banging away. And it was a cold day, so I wore my down vest, and I didn't think twice of it. Then I was heading to the airport, and then just as I was getting there, I kind of sniffed myself and like, ooh, because it just radiated gunpowder. It just smelled, 15 feet away. It just kind of had a very strong residue. But so I went through the TSA, and I got my boarding pass got marked with a big S, which meant I was taken aside, and the TSA agents, there were two of them, and they were going through my bag every little inch of it. And I'd been reading about the TSA, so I started asking them questions about some of the agency's policies and about the TSA had just appointed a new chief, probably some admiral, and a very, very detailed question. And these guys started to were looking at me and said, okay, it's fine, go. And it was funny because if those folks had done any kind of test for gunpowder residue, I would have failed instantly. And I was kind of concerned about that. But I got in the flight and dodged the TSA bullet that day.
I want to read a couple of paragraphs, if I may, one at a time from this piece. In 2007, TSA expanded its covert behavior detection teams to search out telltale signs of dangerous travelers. More than 30 TSA agents complained in 2002 that the behavior detection program at Boston's Logan International Airport, which relied on idiotic terrorist profiles such as black guys wearing baseball caps backward or Hispanics traveling to Miami. At the Newark airport, TSA agents complained that supervisors pressured them to fabricate false charges against illegal aliens to boost the program's arrest numbers. Now, I'm reasonably informed about government abuse, but I didn't know about any of that.
Well, this is a very, very brazen program. This is something which they started out in a few years after the agency was created. It's sometimes called the SPOT program, screening of passengers by observation techniques. And it's a typical DCBS acronym that sounds a lot more impressive than what it is. But and this is something which I'm sure that I've tripped some of their trip wires and hit some of their trip wires on this, because what happens is you got thousands of TSA agents roaming the airports and doing chat downs and looking for micro expressions by travelers that might signal trouble. But there was a secret checklist which the TSA has kept very close to its chest, but it leaked out recently, and it turns out that some of the warning signs for travelers that these TSA wizards are looking for are things like yawning, throat clearing, gazing down. But my favorite warning sign for a terrorist traveler is someone who makes excessive complaints about the screening process. Now, this is probably not the first thing that the guys in Al-Qaeda teach their terrorist trainees.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, you would shut up about the process. You don't want to call any attention to yourself whatsoever. So it almost sounds as if, I say almost, this policy exists simply as retaliation against people who stand up for themselves.
Well, the TSA has done a lot of that. Around 2003 or 2004, the TSA started to impose attitude fines on people. They would fine people up to $1,000 for someone who had showed a bad attitude or had complained or had somehow insulted the dignity of a TSA agent. And this was something which Congress never approved. This is something that the agency pulled out of its hat. If someone wanted to file an appeal on this, it was a very onerous process. You had to go through an administrative law judge who was, of course, completely biased in favor of the TSA. But this is typical of how the agency keeps making up rules as year after year after year and debacle after debacle, because the TSA has been a laughingstock ever since it was created.
What about the... Well, I want to look for some happy news here, because when they
introduced... Well, then why are you interviewing me?
but we have made at least a little bit of progress against the TSA, haven't we, in the sense that there were a couple of types of new scanners they introduced, and they did actually get rid of one of them, the more offensive of the two. That's at least something, although it's two steps forward, one step back for them in the old Leninist formulation. But what's the detail about that? I don't know the scientific angle on it.
Well, around 2008, the TSA started to put these whole body scanners in airports and was pressuring folks to go through them. A lot of people were distrustful of that. In 2010, the TSA ramped this up and tried to put them in as many airports as possible. And lots of people were saying that they simply did not want to have part of their government dossier, a nude photo of themselves. Because these are very, very detailed photos. It's possible to tell, for instance, if a woman has some kind of ring in her nipple. It's possible to tell if a guy is circumcised. Very, very detailed stuff, which the government, of course, lied about and claimed, oh, no, these are not very sharp photos. Yeah, typical government BS. But there were a lot of people who did not want to go through those. So what the TSA did would start at what they called enhanced pat-downs for people who opted out from the whole-body scanners. And basically what this was, they were just trying to punish people who did not submit. And so there were a huge number of complaints about TSA screeners grabbing women's breasts, squeezing their butts, grabbing men's private packages. There was a famous video made out in San Diego by a guy who was very savvy and who had a showdown with a TSA agent. And I think the phrase he used was, "Don't touch my junk," and that's something which went viral on the internet. But TSA kept that up, and TSA also lied about the safety risk of those scanners, because according to a PBS investigation, those scanners could cause up to 100 new cancer cases per year among travelers. These were the type of scanners that were banned in Europe because they were considered a health risk. But it's funny to see the different defenses that TSA made for these. At one point, the TSA was claiming, well, these were safe because we checked the radiation level. And I think it was General Accounting Office or somebody else checked on that. And it turns out that the TSA was checking the radiation levels on machines once a year. Which now, if you go to a hospital, if you go to your doctor and they said that they only check the radiation level for x-rays once a year, you would think, what the hell is this? A third world country? But that's the attitude that TSA had. And they didn't care about the health risk because they didn't have to pay for them. And all they cared about was maximizing submission.
All right. Well, Jim, this brings up the key question, which would be why we think they're doing these things versus why the average American thinks they're doing them. The average American thinks we do need some security after all. There are some bad people who, if given the chance, might want to cause some damage on a plane or hijack a plane or something. So at least they're keeping us safe, even in their own bumbling way, or maybe they're casting the net a little too broadly, but it's better than having nothing. We have to have something. That's what people would say. What would you say to that?
Well, it's funny how so many folks have blind faith in government, and it's something which I having stood in numerous TSA lines and being a natural-born troublemaker, I'm often trying to chat people up to see what they think, and most of the folks are just kind of like cows going to a slaughterhouse. They're kind of like, well, it's important not to cause trouble, and folks kind of frown or glower at me because I'm saying, well, there was a report last week that showed that they're who's this guy, it's also possible that some people might have thought I was an undercover government agent trying to entrap them into saying something that could be used against them. So, I mean, there's that level of paranoia in some places. A 95% failure rate for finding the bombs and the guns is not really a safety blanket. But the federal government, politicians, two presidents, and others have told so many, made so many false statements on TSA and its security. It would make a lot more sense to privatize security, to let airports and airlines and passengers have a free choice and have a voice in choosing what level of intrusion and risk that people are comfortable to live with. Because if there was a TSA-free airline, I think that they'd do very well in a lot of places in this country. Maybe not Washington. There's an awful lot of servile folks here. But, you know, a place like Idaho, boy, people would love that.
What about the argument that we should just privatize airport security? Because airport security is a good thing. At some level, we would like to have some security. And people say, let's just privatize the TSA. Is there a problem with that approach?
Well, I mean, it doesn't make sense to try to privatize the TSA, because the TSA is born and bred in the Briar Patch. I mean, it's a federal agency. The folks who work there are used, many of them are used to being domineering. Most of them many of them are the kind of folks who would have otherwise worked as prison guards. And when you have that kind of mindset, you know, the thought of those same individuals shifting to a private and voluntary security system simply is not going to work. Some of them might be able to get jobs if the security was privatized, but it's interesting. Congress a number of times has tried to allow an option for airports to shift to private security, but TSA has done everything it could to sabotage airports from getting rid of the TSA agents.
And the key thing to me is that if these are so-called private firms, but they're given the task of simply carrying out government orders more efficiently than a government agency could itself do, then it's not really a private firm. A private firm gets to make all the decisions. It's not just deciding what's the best way to carry out the government's version of security. We'll decide what security really involves, and we'll decide how much intrusiveness the public wants and balance that against the need for security. The issue is not, is it a private firm carrying out government orders? It's, what if the airports and the airlines, which presumably have, you know, something of a stake in airport security, said, all right, we're going to compete along these lines too. And some passengers will find this particular practice too intrusive, so they won't travel on that airline. And others who are willing to take more risks will travel on this one, and it'll be up to the consumer to decide. That would never be allowed under so-called TSA privatization.
Yeah, I mean, it's the feds would still want to have a one-size-fits-all dictate. And so if you have folks who, you know, yeah, I mean, that's a good point. But something that would be great about moving to private airport security is the agents and the companies and the airports would no longer have sovereign immunity. So if somebody had a case and caught on videotape where they're going through through airport security, and some security agency reaches out and squeezes a woman's breast, boom. You've got criminal charges. You've got a civil lawsuit. You have all kinds of hell coming down on that agent and on the company that hired them. Nowadays, it's effectively impossible to hold TSA liable for anything that its almost 50,000 agents do to American citizens.
Now, that is an excellent point. I actually hadn't thought of that one. So there are all kinds of good reasons to be thinking in the correct way about the TSA. It's funny. I think most people at this point have adapted themselves to the ever-changing demands of the TSA. The different requirements they seem to change and be so arbitrary from time to time in terms of what I can bring on board and how I package it and do the shoes go on the belt or in the tray. And it makes you think that maybe these standards are arbitrary and they're just meant to instill in the public a sense of submission and subordination. Now, am I just being paranoid to think that?
No, I mean, I think that there's a very good case to make that assumption. It's often difficult to know what TSA's motivations are because the agency often doesn't know what it's doing. I mean, it's sort of like trying to figure out why the TSA did something can be like searching in a dark room for a black cat that is not there. And the TSA has also been very, very secretive. It's tended to scorn the Freedom of Information Act. Journalists who have tried to get key documents have had to wait for 4 or 5 years I think there's a 20 or 30 day limit under the Federal Freedom of Information Act, but the TSA ignores that laws. In the same way that it ignores the constitutional rights of American citizens, to be free from warrantless searches. Yeah, it's, you know, it's such a cluster screw up of an agency, and there's really nothing that can be done to make it work right. And politicians say, well, we'll have this reform. And like, there was a very amusing response to the Inspector General report that showed a 95% failure rate. The folks at the Washington Post chose to give the former head of the TSA, John Pistole, almost like half of a news article for him to make all these reasons why, well, you know, you really shouldn't be concerned about the 95% failure rate because the IG wasn't testing it like a terrorist would test it, and you know the system works, and it's more, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, is the Washington Post being paid to do TSA PR? They've often seemed to be doing that. They've had some good stories over the years, but they've been pretty much almost as servile as the average person going through the TSA checkpoint at Washington National Airport.
Well, Jim, I'm going to link on, let's see, this is episode 431, so we'll link on the show notes page, tomwoods.com/431, to your USA Today article that we've been talking about today. You are one of the top people on this issue, and in keeping it before the public, a lot of times when one of these innovations, and I don't mean that in a praiseworthy way, it comes about in our life, we tend to acclimate ourselves to it, forget about it, view it as a minor inconvenience. But in a way, you, with issues like this, have been like the Sons of Liberty, the American Revolution, the committees of correspondence, to keep things always before the eyes of the public so they don't fall back to sleep again. And if and when things do turn around, I genuinely believe it will be because, in large part, because of you and people like you, that it did happen. So thanks so much for your time today.
Hey, thanks for your kind words, Tom.
All right, everybody, a couple quick things before we wrap up for today. I'm going to be speaking once again at the National Convention of Young Americans for Liberty this year. I will be speaking in particular on August 1st of 2015, which is my birthday, by the way. This will be the second year in a row that on my birthday I've been with Young Americans for Liberty. I'm going to be bringing a couple of my children with me this year, so we're going to have great fun. That'll be in the D.C. area. I don't have all the details just yet, but I will be posting the details over on my my events page. That's right, tomwoods.com/events. So do please check that out. Also, remember to check out my free ebook that I just released that helps you start your blog or website, because you should all be blogging. It gives you great practice to help you become a better writer. There's no question that the discipline of writing regularly, writing short pieces, is the best way to become a better writer in the least amount of time. So start that blog for many reasons, by the way. In the introduction to my book, I explain all the reasons that having a blog can help you tremendously from a professional point of view, in your job or in getting a job. There are so many ways you can use a blog in that way. I talk about all the reasons you should be doing it, but I also give you all kinds of tips that I use, plugins that I use, things that I use to help me expand my online presence to, yes, that's true, even earn a living online. All different tips are available in there. You can find this ebook. You can get it in Kindle, EPUB, and PDF, so whatever format you prefer, over at freewebsitebook.com. Freewebsitebook.com is where to get that. So enjoy that. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I hope you'll join me again tomorrow. We'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.